Hello, hello. Hello, hello. Hey there, my name is Alex DeBoer. Hello, my name is Alex DeBoer. This is your Vancouver COVID update. Today is Tuesday, March 31st. Something big is happening in Canada. As the effects of COVID-19 close borders and threaten to cut off international drug supplies, people who use drugs may be at greater risk of both overdosing and contracting COVID-19. In response, the federal government has issued exemptions for prescribing controlled substances, meaning prescription drugs and drugs that are usually illegal. So, is this safe supply? In other words, do people who use drugs now have access to a safe, properly dosed drug supply? I reached out to my friend Sam Fenn to get answers. Sam is an award-winning reporter on drug policy and is the senior producer of Crackdown Podcast, a podcast about drugs, drug policy, and the war on drugs, led by drug user activists and supported by research. Hey. Take a listen.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I am good. Let me change the headphones here.
Are you recording yourself?
Yeah.
Great.
Two. Seems good. Good level. Sounds fine.
Well, thanks for talking to me. I know you're really busy.
No problem.
I'll just get started. So last week on March 26th, our mayor Kennedy Stewart announced at a city press conference that safe supply was being rolled out, and that this safe supply would help people in the downtown east side who are fighting two health emergencies at once, COVID-19 and a poison illicit drug supply. And so after that happened, I was messaging with you on Twitter, and I was saying how I'm feeling really hopeful and like this is a big win and it can save so many lives. And you definitely had a much more cautious kind of response. So I wanted to dig into that caution, and I'd like to just start out by asking you the obvious question, I think, right off the top, which is this safe supply?
Right. So the answer to that is no, it isn't safe supply. But I want to say before I get into the caution that you're talking about, that if you're listening to this and you use you use stimulants or opiates or side, go talk to your doctor as soon as possible. There is increased access to the drugs that you need, and it will be safer to go do it this way. So if you think you could benefit from that, go talk to them. And this is a very important move. Frankly, it's the kind of move that you would have expected to see back in 2016 when BC then declared a public health emergency around the overdose crisis. Since then, over 5,000 people have died of overdose deaths in the province. And so now we are seeing some emergency around COVID-19, the kind of urgency we haven't seen up to now as, you know, thousands of people died of overdoses. So the reason why I think it's important that we understand that this isn't safe supply and that isn't just sort of a sort of irritating semantic argument by people on the left or something like that. In order to explain it, you have to kind of go back in time a little bit. So drug users in Vancouver have been talking about having access to a licit, like legal version of the drugs they use illegally. I was talking with my friend and the host of Crackdown Podcast, Garth Mullins, about this. He thinks he remembers the first meeting he went where this was discussed would have been back in 1998. This is sort of like an intuitive, revolutionary, and like very noble political goal. And the way to put it most, you know, sort of succinctly, is that what we really need is to take this illegal thing, drugs, decriminalize it, legalize it, and then start providing a regulated supply of it to people who need it for free. And specifically what we should be doing is providing a regulated supply of the drugs that people actually use. In Vancouver, the drugs that people actually use mostly right now, on this, like in the downtown east side, are fentanyl, cocaine, crack cocaine, right? And, you know, in a pinch, if you can find it, heroin. Or sorry, not in a pinch. Everyone would love to find heroin. You just can't find it anymore. So the those drugs are not included in these new prescriber guidelines that were announced on the 26th. The drugs that are included are, for opiates, oral hydromorphone, or what people call dillies. Those are pills. I know that it is possible to shoot them. I don't know experientially how that differs from heroin or fentanyl. I don't know how easy it is to smoke those drugs, but it is it'll be a different route of administration, a different kind of medicine with different effects than the drugs that people actually take. So you're asking people to switch what they're doing to something else that may or may not be as effective for them. And so the other important thing to talk about is dosage. We can't be sure yet, but BC's Minister of Mental Health and Addictions, Judy Darcy, has said in interviews that this program is about eliminating withdrawal symptoms, not intoxication, whereas the Chief Public Health Officer, Bonnie Henry, has said that it won't be a, quote, free-for-all. And the existing hydromorphone tablet program in Vancouver, we already have one, is notorious for underdosing people. So getting people just up to the line, you know, of not being sick, sometimes not even all the way up to that line, and being very, very cautious to not inebriate people. Well, the result of that is that people sort of think of that as kind of like their first morning cup of coffee, you know, and then they go they get the rest of the way using the black market. That's always been deadly. And now with COVID-19 here, it's potentially more deadly. So that was a very long-winded answer to your question.
Well, no, that was really, really great. I just wanted to ask a couple follow-ups because you said some things that I want to dig into. So first off, the reason we have different versions of these drugs, that's because Canada doesn't produce heroin and other drugs, right? Like, that's the reason we have these pharmaceutical substitutes?
No, I don't think so. It's true that, as far as I know, when we do give out medical heroin, which we do at a place called Crosstown Clinic, we call it diacetylmorphine, you know, it's like more polite, but it's medical heroin that we import that from other countries. I imagine it would be hard to import a lot more of it right now, given the, just the way that supply chains work globally amidst the COVID-19 crisis. Fair enough. Fentanyl is a very commonly used drug that every hospital has access to, that is very obtainable in Canada. And there is a fentanyl-assisted treatment program, very, very small. I believe it's like 6 or 8 participants. I can't remember. It's either 6 or 8, I think. But specifically with fentanyl, I mean, fentanyl is extremely accessible, and it's the drug sort of right at the heart of the overdose crisis, and the drug that most people are using on the street. And I think that, like, it's important, I guess, to point out to people listening, because some people hear fentanyl and they think that that's just basically poison, right? People are trying to use heroin. If you accidentally use fentanyl, poof, you're dead, right? It's not really how it works. Fentanyl is a lot more potent than heroin, but people can adjust their dose. People in the city have learned how to do that. And the problem with fentanyl, like the problem with all illegal drugs, is that it is impossible to know exactly what you are taking. But fentanyl is an incredibly safe and predictable drug when given in a medical setting. Probably both of our grandmothers have had it at one point or another for surgeries. So all of that to say, no, I don't think that the reason why it's been limited to oral hydromorphone is strictly because of the inaccessibility of the actual drugs people use. I think it's a moral, moral commitment to substituting drugs as opposed to giving people what they actually want, which we still seem to have this hang up about and feel like it's Like that's, I don't know. It's like, it's wrong and bad for people want to be high. So we don't want to like give in and let them.
Yeah. That's really fascinating. That's something I'm really interested in. So there is, as you highlight, the difference between having a drug policy that allows people to take drugs to stabilize them and kind of fend off dope sickness versus a drug policy that actually lets people get high or become intoxicated. And so can you talk a bit about the difference there and which category this new emergency prescribing falls into?
So I think it's less about preferring drugs that have some sort of that don't have euphoric effects, because we are talking about treating this with drugs that produce euphoria. I think it's more a brand problem with heroin and fentanyl, that giving drug users government-bought heroin and fentanyl has a kind of a political ring to it that's unappealing to our leaders right now. Whereas giving them hydromorphone, well, what is that? I don't know. It just sounds like medicine, right? So I think that is part of it. Now, one of the things that's very important to say about what happened, like what actually changed, right, is basically the biggest change was that a new list of prescriber guidelines was given out. So the government hasn't given anyone drugs. What they've done is they've told doctors to go to a website and look at a PDF, and on that PDF there was new guidelines for how to prescribe during COVID-19 to people who use drugs. So the guidance to prescribers is to, quote, prescribe according to current use, which is a little vague, I think. Does that mean prescribe the same amount or the equivalent dosage to what somebody tells you? They come in and they say, this is the amount of fentanyl I do. And then you look at your little chart and you figure out how much hydromorphone that's equivalent to, and then you give them that amount. Does according to current use mean that then you take 30% off because you figure, oh, well, the extra 30% is just them wanting to get high, you know? And it's important to note here, I think, that the prescribers, doctors, tend to have a kind of a moralistic attitude about this, or at least frequently have a moralistic attitude about this. And so assuming that now we are going to get some sort of a sea change culturally in the medical community that's going to lead to anything that we would want to call a safe supply of drugs is naive, really, I think.
Yeah, right. And so I guess we'll be, as you're saying, relying a lot on the discretion of physicians. So something that's interesting to me is that this has been seen largely as kind of a win for Vancouver, and that's this new quote-unquote safe supply is something that's kind of been brought in for the downtown east side exclusively. But this measure is something that was taken by Health Canada, our federal health department. So, like, will this lead to prescription drugs being available to people who use drugs who have addictions in other places besides Vancouver?
I certainly hope so. There are brave and moral doctors in Canada who will seize on this opportunity across Canada, I believe, to do the right thing. It can't just be a couple of people. We're going to need a kind of a cultural sea change. And documents like the document produced by the British Columbia Center on Substance Use with their clinical guidelines help, because they, at least in the context of British Columbia, you know, as a prescriber that you're unlikely to get sued or get in some sort of trouble for doing the right thing. It may be less clear if you're a doctor in Ontario or Alberta right now, which is why you want to see, why we absolutely need to see other provinces start providing similar kinds of clinical guidelines to their doctors. But we also know that whatever people do, these interventions are going to be threatened very quickly I'll be a little like, okay, I'll be a, like a little incendiary about it, I guess. You have to ask yourself, right? If 5,000 people died and they didn't do anything, and now that COVID-19 is upon us, why are they doing something now, right? And that it is much more the fear that drug users could be a disease vector for middle class people that is motivating this flurry of policy change right now. That maybe sounds really cynical, but I have a really hard time reconciling how our three levels of government have just sat on their hands as people have died, and more than just sat on their hands, that they've actively sort of squashed the direct action and advocacy of people who use drugs, activists and doctors and academics to provide some kind of life-saving intervention for 4 years, that they've been antagonistic to these ideas for so long. And now all of a sudden, in a flurry of activity, they're big fans of what they call safe supply.
Well, and it's, as you say, this is a response to a public health emergency. And something that is kind of darkly fascinating is to wonder whether these things that are given to people now that they needed all along, like housing, you know, the city is finding shelter spaces at least for people who are homeless, and they're procuring hotel rooms for people as well. And now we have this extension of prescription drugs for people who are addicted to drugs. So it kind of leaves you to wonder, like, will this end? Like, do you think that this quote-unquote safe supply will be clawed back at the end of this crisis?
I don't know. I think the right historical moment to look back on, though, for this is this program called the Naomi Study that started in 2005 in Vancouver. It was an initial pilot study to look at prescription heroin. The participants of that study started being given heroin. They'd go to a clinic every morning and take it in a medical setting, and their lives improved in a lot of ways. And then a paper was written about it, and the academic study ended, and they just kicked everybody out back to street drugs. And it was, the results were horrifying. People probably died, almost definitely died. It's hard. I mean, mostly they just lost track of everyone. And later on, they restarted a new program called Salome. But it turns out that what had happened was actually a violation of something called the Helsinki Principle. You're not allowed to give people medically effective treatment and then take it away. It's an international principle. And the patients advocated for themselves and eventually convinced the academics and the local governments to do the right thing. And even still, they tried to shut the Crosstown Clinic down, and a BC Supreme Court exemption had to eventually came in and allowed just the people who were in the program and no more to be able to keep getting access to the drugs. That is typical of the kinds of program delivery we have in Vancouver. We threw tens of thousands of people off of an effective version of methadone and replaced it with a less effective version called methadose. I mean, if you're a drug user in Vancouver and you start being given access to a program that's working for you, you'd be foolish to think that this is going to last. And that cynicism, most of the drug users I talk to, they have that kind of view. This is kind of working for now. That reputation that we've earned as a province, a country, a city, weakens any kind of programming you want to do, because you're just gonna one of the things that matters is that people sort of want to opt into things, right? Well, why opt in if you don't have reason to believe this is going to be lasting? And so one of the things I'm very interested to do is to talk to the members of Crackdown's editorial board and see who is actually going to avail themselves of the access to hydromorphone or these no prescribing guidelines, and who and I believe just sort of from the initial our sort of initial questions, it seems like not many, but people are glad it's there as a backup. So if something is to happen to the illicit drug supply, well, it's there, you know.
But why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they start accessing more prescription drugs instead of having to buy them illegally?
I don't know. I mean, like, if you...
Because it's a different type of drug.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. Like, if I like to drink coffee in the morning, and if I was told I could take a caffeine pill that had the equivalent amount of jolt to it and stop drinking coffee, would I... And it's free, would I stop drinking coffee? No, I like drinking coffee, you know? It's working for me.
I interviewed Trey Helton last week, who you and I both know, the manager of the Vancouver Overdose Prevention Society, and he was bringing up kind of this exact thing. You know, he used to use drugs for a long time, and he was saying how he wasn't just addicted to the drug. Like, he was addicted to cooking it and then injecting it and the whole process. So I think that analogy of, you know, what's the difference between having a cup of coffee and having a caffeine pill is really apt.
And the other part of this is the trust piece, right? Where we've had our police raid and harass people at harm reduction sites over the years. We've had the RCMP produce misinformation, sort of intentionally misleading research on harm reduction, just to sort of poison the well intellectually. We've had governments come in and be openly hostile to the community. And so the idea that the government is now giving you access to free drugs, you know, I think people are sort of appropriately skeptical about that. And it would take a bolder stance to convince people otherwise. And it may also have taken a bolder stance much earlier. So if there is any kind of government-delivered safe supply program at any point, it's going to be a real challenge to convince people this is the real deal, it's not going away, and we're sorry about everything that happened in the past. And all of that is going to be, all that will be necessary, I think.
Yeah, totally. There's a lot of things that need to be communicated. And so then I'm left kind of wondering, what would it take to make this safe supply permanent, but also, do we want to make this permanent, or do we want to morph this into really something that looks really different?
There's like a lot of different visions for safe supply. And I think that we can have really fascinating conversations about the pros and cons of different options at some point. But I do think in general, it's very important that we don't lose these sort of these gains that we're getting now in terms of the new clinical guidelines for prescribing, that doctors should be made aware of the very real science around addictions, like the overdose, harm reduction, and addictions research, and be told to prescribe drugs in a way that is going to reduce harm. That should be true across the board. And so, no, we absolutely shouldn't tolerate these guidelines being reversed to something that looked more like the status quo. But we're also going to have to fight for something that's more fulsome and more likely to end the war on drugs and stop all the kind of needless death and extremely preventable deaths.
Do you know when the next episode is out?
Yeah, the next episode of Crackdown will be out this week, definitely. I imagine sometime on Thursday. But if you subscribe to our show, you will get it, regardless of if I get it done Thursday afternoon or Friday morning, you know, it will arrive. And the next one is going to be dealing with a lot of what we've been talking about today in terms of the rollout of these new guidelines, and to what extent this sort of is and is not a safe supply program.
Right. Amazing. Everyone should listen to that. Great. Well, thanks so much for your time, Sam.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This piece was made by me, Alex DeBoer. Special thanks to Sam Fenn for his time. The song you hear is Gusty Hollow by Blue Dot Sessions. Take care.